Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver Sports Station, 1043 The Fan.
All right, let me catch you up here on some breaking news. It was reported, I believe, who had it first was Shams Charania of The Athletic. He's a senior lead NBA writer. He put it out there just a few minutes ago in the previous segment. Denver Nuggets forward Aaron Gordon has agreed to a four-year, $92 million contract extension with the franchise. His agent, Calvin Andrews of Clutch Sports, told The Athletic, deal includes a player option for Gordon on the 2025-26 season. We know that the Nuggets acquired Gordon last year at the trade deadline to fortify what we thought would be a title-contending team. Jamal goes down. It doesn't work out like that. But this, for me, and James Merrillat of DenverFan.com dropping in here, this, for me, had to get done. Like, it had to. It didn't work out with Jeremy Grant after trading a first-round pick the previous year around the same time. Aaron Gordon isn't Jeremy Grant. He's almost like Jeremy Grant light. But for this group, him being the fourth option when Jamal is back after the MPJ deal gets done, which I'm assuming any day now we could hear about it, I think it's a really good core of four players. What do you think?
I would agree with that. I thought before Jamal went down, the way Aaron Gordon was fitting in, I thought it was all working together really nicely. He wasn't a huge scorer, and he was kind of deferring, but he clearly understood, hey, I'm the fourth wheel on this team. Now, that is a really expensive fourth wheel, but yep. that's what the NBA is nowadays, right? Like, it's a shocking number. But, you look at it and go, 4 years, $92 million for a guy who disappeared against the Suns, who shot 0% from three-point land against the Suns. I mean, but that's the going rate. It also, though, shows that there is the trickle effect of not getting the Jeremy Grant deal done, right? Because then you'd have Jeremy Grant and Gary Harris instead of just Aaron Gordon. I think Aaron Gordon's a really nice player. I think when this group, this core four is together, I actually think maybe it's better than Jeremy Grant, because Jeremy Grant, you and I disagree on how much of this played a part in it, if he wanted a bigger role. But was he going to be happy being the fourth guy?
No, I don't. No,
I don't think he was.
No.
So even though I don't think that's why he went elsewhere, I'll grant you that. Same issue I think they have of, well, now is Will Barton going to be happy being the fifth wheel? Because Will Barton thinks he's a one, right? Which I kind of like the fact that, to be a good player, you got to think you're great. But you also got to know your role.
Yeah, he's not short on confidence. And sometimes walking that line of that role and that confidence is like a razor's edge.
And there was a time when, hey, there wasn't a lot of guys on the Nuggets who would be willing to take shots at the end of the game. And Will Barton, at least having the you-know-what-to-do-it, was valuable.
And he can go get his own shot.
Yeah, yeah. So it's maybe not as much anymore. But I do think Aaron Gordon fits nicely with the big four. I think he's in that group when Jamal comes back. I think we need to see more out of him. I think he was a bit of a disappointment once Jamal went down. Because I think if you're going to be in that group, when everybody's healthy, it all looks great, works great, everybody fits together well, I'm happy with that. But if you're part of that core four, and you got a four-year, $92 million deal, you have to at least have the ability, if Jokic is out for a while, MPJ's out for a while, Jamal's out until the All-Star break, you have to have the ability to step up and play as the third guy. And that's the question that I have about Aaron Gordon, because we didn't see it against Phoenix. He was a no-show. He was better against Portland, especially when they were able to put him on Dame and he showed some of his versatility. But you have to be able to be a guy that, hey, for a month, for a week, when somebody's down, I can step up and be the second guy, the third guy, and just not always be, man, I'm a really nice fourth wheel on a really talented starting lineup. You got to be a little more than that for that kind of money.
I don't expect him to be, though. Like, Aaron Gordon kind of is who he is, and that is a good NBA player. That here's how I'll phrase it, James. And if you're just joining us, we're reacting. Aaron Gordon just signed. It was just announced a four-year, $92 million deal with the Denver Nuggets. I think he is a great fit for the Nuggets, but I think the Nuggets are an even better fit for him, if that makes sense. Because if Aaron Gordon is averaging 15 or 16 points for you, 18 points, you're a really bad NBA team. Aaron Gordon should probably average between 10 and 12 points and a fourth option on a team that wants to win a championship. Like, championship team, if your fourth best team is, or your fourth best player is Aaron Gordon, like, you can talk me into that that's a championship team. Can't be your second best player. Can't be your third best player. Your fourth best player? Yeah, I can go there.
I agree with you. So over the course of 82 games, you're right. That's what he should average. What I'm saying, though, is he has to have the ability to step up in short spurts, short durations of time, and be the third guy until Jamal gets back. Here's what I'm saying on it. I'm seeing all these stories of PJ Dozier needs to step up. If your plan to bridge the gap between now and when Jamal comes back, or especially now and when Jamal is Jamal, right? Coming back is different than being what he was. We see it with Cortland Sutton.
Yep.
Almost every time we watch the Broncos, whether it's in practice or in a game. If your plan to bridge that gap is PJ Dozier, it's a flawed plan to begin with. If your plan is, hey, we've got Aaron Gordon and we want him to be the fourth guy, but he needs to step up his game for the first half of the season, I'll buy into that more than it's, we need, you know, Campazzo or Zeke Austin Nagy Rivers.
Right. Yeah.
He needs to blossom in year two. Like, come on. It would be great if it happened, but I think having a guy who was one-time All-Star, now on a bad, it was on a bad team, and there's a reason why he was putting up those kind of numbers. Mm-hmm. But he does have that ability versus a guy that was, you know, a bouncing between the G League and the NBA, take his game to the next level. You can't sell me on that.
And what you just did for our fans who aren't as dialed in as you were with that contract, you're talking about Jeremy Grant. You're talking about Jeremy Grant, right?
Right.
And what he did in Detroit. Okay, and again, just to reset one more time, if you're just joining us, it's just been announced in the last few minutes that Aaron Gordon has signed a 4-year, $92 million deal with the Denver Nuggets. James and I both love talking Nuggets basketball here. James Merrillat from DenverFan.com. The more that I learn about Jeremy Grant here in Denver, it was never going to work. There was a serious disconnect and a personality conflict between he and the way he thought he was being used and Michael Malone. So I think there's a few things at play there with the Jeremy Grant thing. And the reason we bring up Jeremy Grant is because the trickle-down effect was getting Aaron Gordon and what you had to give up for him. And now, but the thing is, like, you can't not do this deal. Like, you're overpaying him, like the Nuggets have to do. But, like, you can't have him trade Gary Harris. And I think they gave up a first-round pick as well for Aaron Gordon. You bring him here. He has fit well enough, and you can forecast what that group would look like. Because if you don't get this deal done, James, you'd be railing against the Nuggets if they didn't get a deal like this one done.
At this point, yeah, you had to, right? Like, I'm, you know, somewhat, and I'm not crying over spilt milk, but I'm at least remembering the spilt milk of not getting the deal done with Jeremy Grant had a domino effect, right? You had to give Aaron Gordon this kind of money. You had to give up Gary Harris. And Gary Harris was not the player they thought he was going to be when they gave him the big contract. Who was the other guy was in that trade? It was RJ Hampton?
RJ Hampton, yeah.
RJ Hampton.
Who they gave a tribute video when he came back.
Right.
In his rookie year.
Now, RJ Hampton, when all I heard was, hey, they don't have any guards. They can't possibly compete against the Suns. They don't have any guards. Well, Gary Harris and RJ Hampton would have looked pretty good during that series. It would have given him a better shot. If you'd had Jeremy Grant, Gary Harris, RJ Hampton, instead of Aaron Gordon to pull in a disappearing act, Nuggets would have been in better shape. Look, they had to get this deal done. I'm with you. If they hadn't got this done, it's all of a sudden we're sitting there going,
it's Jeremy Grant 2.0.
Yeah, and maybe worse, because now you don't have any more assets to go trade at the deadline to get Aaron Gordon 2.0.
Right.
So they had to get it done, but I do find it funny, and this is the kind of stuff that gets me in trouble when we do Nuggets war rooms, is the same people who told me, well, you can't possibly be mad at Michael Malone that they got swept by the Suns. I mean, look at this roster. Are now telling me they're going to be fine with exactly that same roster from the start of the season until whenever Jamal Murray comes back. Because it's the same group other than Bones, and nobody expects Bones to do anything in his rookie year. So that same group that got swept by the Suns, that their coach said quit after game two, that's the group that's going to keep this team in contention until Jamal is ready to be Jamal? Which is it? Can we be mad at Michael Malone for getting swept? Or is this team going to fall flat on his face until Jamal Murray comes back.
I do not think the latter. I think they're going to win their fair share of regular season games until he comes back. We could do a little side wager if you want, what their winning percentage is before Jamal comes back. We can talk about that.
All I'm saying then, my criticism of Michael Malone, that everybody said, that's why I called him Teflon Mike, because you couldn't say anything, because heaven forbid he tries to win without Jamal Murray. I guess he will have PJ Dozier back. So that's going to be the difference maker.
The sarcasm is thick with this one.
Sorry, I'm calling BS on that one. I'm actually with you. I think they'll be fine. That's why I was so upset in the playoffs. Because I'm like, look, I don't expect you to beat the Suns, but can you make an adjustment in four games to the pick and roll? Or are we just going to let the same thing from Chris Paul happen game after game after game after game? So the Jeremy Grant thing, right? You talked about that conflict. Okay, so I'll buy that he had a conflict with Michael Malone. Tell me that story. Don't tell me he went to Detroit for the exact same money because he wants a bigger role. Maybe that's a part of it, but I don't buy that story completely. And I'm also worried about this Michael Porter Jr. extension, because everybody thinks he and Michael Malone get along great. And I think Michael Malone has fallen bass backwards into it working out with MPJ, because he continues to not want to play him. And then they go to the bubble and they don't have any options, so they play him. Then Jamal gets hurt, they don't have any options, so they play him. I'm not so sure there's not a conflict between those two. If he gets an extension done, no worries. But it worries me or concerns me that that's not done yet. What's the holdup?
I think it's coming any day now. We'll look out for it. James Merrillat hanging out, DenverFan.com. We have breaking Broncos news. And it ain't good. Details next.
Denver Sports Station 104.3. The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
All right, we have breaking Broncos news of the unfortunate variety. Ronald Darby is being placed on IR. The cornerback that came from the Washington football team a year ago that played 16 games for the only time in his career in 2020, one game into the season. Ronald Darby has a hamstring injury that will place him on IR. Could have been much worse, I suppose. Expected to be back not long after the short-term IR, but probably for the next month or so, not going to see Ronald Darby.
Well, it's not surprising, right? I mean, he's a guy with injury issues. He's had a history of it. We talked about it when they gave him the three-year, $30 million deal of there's a little bit of a risk to this. There's a reason why Washington let him become available when, you know, according to George Payton and Vic Fangio, there's this shortage of cornerbacks around the league. Like, there are not 100 people on the planet who can play cornerback at the NFL level.
So true.
So if Washington's willing to let him go, there has to be a reason, and it's, well, he can't stay healthy. So here we are 1 week in, and that's coming to fruition. The good news is, well, the guy they took at number 9 overall now gets to start, gets to step in, gets to play. The Pat Surtain era begins. I would have felt better about that heading into last week because we're coming off a game in which he gave up a touchdown, played 16 plays, and then got benched. He didn't play after that. So, you know, do I think he should have got benched? No, I think it's one of the Vic Fangio issues of if you make a mistake, especially when you're a young player, you give no time to grow, no time to learn from it, no time to develop. It's, oh, well, come stand over here next to me and see if you get better doing watching the game with me. So I think that was problematic. So, hey, now he's going to get, you know, his hand is going to get forced, right? Pat Surtain's going to be on the field. The other thing about this, Zach, and they had this issue back in the day with Rich Tootin when he was their strength and conditioning coach. And then they brought in Luke Richeson, and it went away. And they went to more Rich Tootin was kind of the old Olympic-style lifting, right? Like the kind of stuff you would have seen, you know, Ivan Drago doing in Rocky IV, really heavy weights and all that kind of stuff. And then Luke Richeson was a lot of the new age stuff, you know, more reps. And I don't even know exactly what it is, but they had all these, you know, crazy new machines that they bought and they trained on. Well, not all of them, but a lot of those went away. And now it's Lauren Landau. And, man, they have a lot of soft tissue injuries. It seems like it's hamstring after hamstring after hamstring that keep guys out for weeks. Like, look, Jerry Jeudy got hurt. That's football. There's nothing you can do about that. That's no one's fault except for maybe the people who picked out the turf in the Meadowlands because there's always issues up there. But that's no one's fault. It's just a bad break.
That's
what it is.
Yeah. It's football.
That's going to happen, right? Von Miller last year, going to happen. But these soft tissue injuries just drive me up a wall, and this falls into that category. You know, we saw Tim Patrick miss a ton of camp with a groin. We've now got this hamstring injury. If we went back and looked, I bet you we could find 10 instances of it in the last calendar year where it's just guys that are missing significant time with something that's not a contact injury and not a fluky thing, just a what's going on? Why are we pulling so many hammies? That's the other thing that jumps out about this news to me.
Well, what jumps out to me is the conversations that we had leading up to this point. Like, it was last week where I said I'm going to put my bad cop hat on and play devil's advocate. With all the reasons for optimism, there was a yeah, but with almost all of them. And with Darby, it was the same as it ever was. Darby played one healthy season in the NFL. And that was 2020. And the Broncos rewarded him with a 3-year deal for $30 million.
Yeah.
It lasted one football game. And, you know, luckily the Broncos didn't trade one of those corners. You know, that was the buzz, George Payton in the preseason game. And the depth is going to pay off, like, immediately in week two.
Yeah.
Luckily you have Surtain to jump up into that starting group. But this is look, this is, it's not a season ending injury, okay? That would be worst case scenario. But this, like, you talk about seeds of doubt. These are chunks of doubt with Darby, and it's unfortunately a reflection of his career up until this point.
Yeah, it's not surprising at all. But if I'd ask you, look, we know injuries are going to happen. So if I'd asked you before week one, if I'd have said, all right, the Broncos are going to lose two starters, what position groups can they absorb that the best?
It'd be receivers and corners.
Cornerbacks. All right, so they lost Jerry Jeudy for some time.
And by the way, he's been put on a short-term IR as well.
And they've lost Ronald Darby. Now, they brought Kendall Hinton up from the practice squad. I would have rather seen Trinity Benson now kind of getting a chance to play. But, hey, they got a fifth-round pick next year for him. So, you know, that'll be fun to watch develop in 3 years.
Well, I think it's interesting that, like, it is Kendall Hinton. It's not Seth Williams, who they just drafted.
Right.
It's not Tyree Cleveland. Cleveland, who they drafted a year ago and actually played well down the back. No, he didn't have a good camp by any means. But, like, it's Kendall Hinton. Like, he's going to be on the active. This is no longer stick. Like,
it's not. But what's funny about it, Kendall Hinton had a good camp, too. And he had a pretty good preseason.
It was okay. It was okay.
But he was like Trinity Benson light.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So Trinity Benson would
every
shine
day,
every single day.
Every day.
And Kendall would have been like, well, he's the other guy who is, you know, playing better than we expected. But Trinity Benson was kind of off the charts compared to what we were thinking he would be. Now, was he Jerry Jeudy? No. But he was probably their third best receiver during camp.
It felt like it.
I mean, it was
day
Jerry
after
Jeudy.
Day.
And then when Tim Patrick was out hurt, it was probably Jerry Jeudy and Trinity Benson on a daily basis. So I think that was a mistake. Look, if they'd have traded one of their cornerbacks, if somebody would have come in and said, hey, we're going to give you a first-round pick for Kyle Fuller, a guy who's going to be here 1 year.
That would never happen.
I know, but I'm just throwing out crazy.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Then, yeah, you get rid of your depth and you take the deal. That's what, and Trinity Benson's not Kyle Fuller, but that's what upset me about the Trinity Benson trade of you take an area of strength and you weaken it. You take a guy you spent 3 years developing to get a draft pick that's going to turn into, at best, somebody you have to take 3 years developing. And, yeah, it was fine if everybody was healthy, but Tim Patrick had been hurt. Cortland Sutton's coming off an injury. It wasn't as though there wasn't reason to believe they may need some depth at receiver as well. And here we are, you know, K.J. Hamler is another guy who seems to have a hammy all the time. That guy last year had so many bucket hat days during training camp, you know, he might as well have been a fan. So it is something that you should have been able to see this coming too. Kendall Hinton's not the worst option in the world, but – If you're just being honest, Trinity Benson would have been better.
No, there's no question. If anyone who was out at training camp on even a fairly regular basis knows that to be true, it is what it is now. But this thought that, you know, it was the 2020 Broncos with the injury issues was just like a one-off, and here we go. It starts literally after one football game. Jerry Jeudy, short-term IR. Ronald Darby, short-term IR, not the end of the world, not season-ending injuries. The Broncos should be able to still win the next two football games without those guys, but it ain't good.
Well, but it also starts to lay the groundwork for Teflon Vic and Teflon Teddy. Right? Like, well, what is Vic supposed to do?
No,
I mean,
nope,
he doesn't have Bradley Chubb.
Nope, James.
He doesn't have Ronald Darby.
James.
What on earth are they supposed to do? Because here's one of the alarming things from the other day. Two sacks, one turnover. That's very much on pace with how anemic this defense has been in terms of being playmakers as they've been during the Vic Fangio era. They were not particularly good. Vaughn was good, and that was a good sign, but they weren't particularly good at getting to Daniel Jones, and they forced the one fumble. That was it. So, you know, the problems that they've had, I think, still are there. It's just Daniel Jones was so bad, he couldn't make him pay for it. It's already two starters, Zach. I can hear it. I can hear state sponsored right now.
Nope.
They got the bullet points. They just need one more. If they get one more, I mean, imagine if they lost Josie Jewell. Oh, my gosh. That would be the third one, and it would just be, what could Vic possibly do? He's got his hands tied behind his back.
I won't accept it. It's NFL football.
I'm with you.
You had the whole offseason. You have the most depth that we've had in years. There is no escape hatch for Teddy Bridgewater or Vic Fangio, period. It's put up or shut up. It's year three. This is the veteran. No escape hatch of injuries. Not listening to it.
Well, he lost Jerry Jeudy, who was going to have a transformational type year.
You got the most depth at that position.
Cortland Sutton's still coming back. He's not 100%, so that certainly works against him.
James.
I mean, he's essentially working with Tim Patrick and KJ Hamler.
Stop it.
I mean, what is a guy supposed to do? You can't hear these stories coming out if they go lay an egg in Jacksonville?
James, I can hear it, but I'm not listening.
Okay, good. I'm not either. But that's the spin. If they go lay an egg in Jacksonville, which I'm not expecting them to, since they won in New York, it's 3-0 or bust. Like, you have to go 3-0. You got to beat Jacksonville. You got to beat the Jets.
We agree.
So there's no excuse. And I think at this point, 2-1 is a failure. If they lay an egg in Jacksonville, which historically the Broncos are terrible in South Florida in September, or in Florida in September. It's hot. It's humid. They don't play well. If they do, if they lose this game, those are going to be the two of the excuses you hear. If the defense struggles, it's like, well, they don't have Darby, Sertan's still a rookie. They don't have Chubb, and, you know, they're still coming together. And if Teddy falls on his face and isn't able to do, and I don't expect him to do what he did in New York, because he was great in New York. Just his playmaking ability was something none of us expected. But if he doesn't play near that level and they score 16 points, it's going to be, well, but he didn't have Jerry. Cortland's not back. The spin's coming, man.
There's something going on right now that has to do with the Broncos opponent this weekend that has me looking at it side-eyed. Really, we're going to put our conspiracy hats on coming up next. California love.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
California have to do with this weekend for the Denver Broncos? What the hell are we talking about here? Really interesting to find out from, I saw it from Ryan O'Halloran, not sure who put it out there first, but the Jacksonville Jags are not making Urban Meyer available to the Denver media. Now, for those who don't know, and I don't expect you to know, this right here is something that happens every single week. Every single week of the NFL season. James and James Merrill from DenverFan.com here. It used to be a requirement from the league. It still feels like one because if the opposing team asks, the other opposing NFL team, of course, makes their coach available to the media. I've been doing this here for 4.5 years. I can't remember a team not making their head coach available. Now, say, well, why does it matter? Who needs to hear from Urban Meyer? Well, the conversation is heating up that Urban Meyer could bail on Jacksonville and head right back to college, right into the Pac-12, right to USC. This is Michael Lombardi from the NFL Network earlier today on Pat McAfee Show.
Yeah, I mean, the Urban Meyer, he needs to read my book about the middle eight. He violated that. But let's talk about that tweet. So I'm just minding my own business yesterday watching tape, and I get a text from somebody in the league, and they said, Urban to USC. And I said, no way. And the guy says, you want to bet on it? And when he said that, I'm thinking, wait a second here. He knows way more than I do. He's asking me the answers to the test that he already knows. So I said, well, tell me why. And he said, look, everybody in Columbus, and this gentleman's from Columbus, knows that maybe pro football may not be sitting well with Urban. Now, they're going to deny all this. We all know that, right? They're going to say, oh, no, Urban's loving it, all that. But when he was working for Fox, everybody in Los Angeles and Columbus thought he was going to take the USC job. But Clay Helton is the ultimate survivor.
Whoa. Okay. And by the way, Michael Lombardi, not at the NFL Network, used to do NFL media. What is it, Richie? Is he with The Athletic? He does a podcast. He used to work for teams. I mean, he was the director of pro personnel and was with the Patriots and da-da-da. But not just the guy who says stuff to say it. Here he is publicly sharing basically a transcript of a text message between he and someone else in the league.
He's well-connected.
Could you imagine if Urban Meyer dips on the Jags and goes to USC in his very first year in Jacksonville?
Oh, without a doubt. I can imagine it. We see this all the time with these guys, right? With Bobby Petrino, Nick Saban is probably the best example. Lou Holtz, way back in the day, people forget that he had a less than one season stint with the Jets. I mean, these guys, Steve Spurrier lasted in Washington a while but hated it. These guys that come from college and have a lot of success and want to take on the challenge of the NFL, and they don't realize, well, wow, I don't get to play every week with a vastly superior roster? This isn't as much fun. And it's much more of a grind. So, it wouldn't shock me at all. The USC job, we could sit here and rattle off the top 10 jobs in college football. USC is going to be on the list.
Yep.
I mean, that's a storied program.
Yep.
That's a place. It shocks me that nobody has been able to come in there since Pete Carroll and turn them into a perennial power. It's just waiting to turn back into it. Now, before Pete Carroll got there, they were in very much this same kind of dry spell. Which is strange. They've just had a hard time finding the right guy. But no, I mean, Urban Meyer would go to USC and he would have success. I mean, here's a guy who won at Bowling Green. He won at Utah. He won at Florida. He won at Ohio State. There's zero reason to believe he wouldn't win at USC. And the Pac-12 has had a fairly decent start to the year here.
Yeah.
With UCLA beating LSU and Oregon beating Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
But you could become a power in that conference at USC. Quickly.
And by the way, let me just say, USC came into this past weekend with a 14th overall ranking.
Yeah. And now their coach is gone.
And now their coach, they lost to Stanford and coach gets fired, but they were ranked the 14th team in the country.
Okay. So when you get fired 2 weeks into the year, when you're 1-1, even if you get upset, right? Like, wow, I didn't see that one coming. And you get fired. There has to be more to the story, right?
You know what it is? It's the reason that Drew Lock didn't win the job. Because
it's the history.
It's already set in place against you. We're just waiting to execute it.
Okay. All right. Which I buy. I still think though, because where are you going to go right now that's going to make a difference in 2021 other than it sticking with Clay Helton? Like it's still an odd move, right? So you look at it and say, well, are we about to find out there's some sort of NCAA violation or he got into some sort of legal trouble? Like, I'm not saying he did, but that's where your mind goes.
What for me, it's we're flagging the best available job in the country and allows us 5 months to get our ducks in a row for someone like Urban Meyer.
And that's the other possibility, right? Of, oh, Urban Meyer just got blown out by the Texans in his debut in the NFL. And maybe he would think right now that this would be a pretty good job. And let's beat everybody to the punch.
Right.
Right. There'll be multiple jobs at the end of the year available, but let's beat everybody to the punch on this one. Now, it doesn't mean there's going to be a USC, right? Cause that's the jobs like Texas.
Yeah. There's
Notre
like five
Dame,
or six of those.
Yeah. Ohio State, a few of the big SEC schools, Alabama, Florida,
LSU,
those
Florida,
would be
yep.
on the list.
Yep.
But USC's in that category.
They are.
They're in the elite group. So that would not shock me at all. And nobody holds it against Nick Saban.
Oh, no.
That he bailed on the Dolphins.
Oh, no.
Nobody holds it against him.
People barely remember. He's just known as the greatest college coach of all time. And guess what? If Urban Meyer went to USC and won big, he'd barely remember he was in Jacksonville. I can barely remember he's here now. He's been here for 1 week.
Yeah.
Say here. He's been in Jacksonville for 1 week. So, and he may smell the stench of what's coming, Urban. He may, his football acumen is obviously tremendous. He may sense the beatdowns that are waiting him around the corner.
Yeah. I mean, if you can't beat the Texans.
Got blown out by the Texans.
If you can't compete with the Texans, what's going to happen when you start playing the good teams on your schedule?
Yeah.
Because everybody's got them.
Or the maybe good teams like the Broncos.
Right. So it's definitely, this is one of those things where, you know, hey, where there's smoke, there's not always fire. But this certainly feels like there's got to be something at least kind of smoldering underneath.
We'll follow it. This story, watch tonight on SportsCenter. This story is just picking up steam.
Oh, yeah.
Just
we'll
picking
be
up
talking
steam.
About it all week.
Yep. All right, James, thanks for pinch hitting while Stokely goes and, warms up before the first tee.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to do it. It was fun.
All right. We will run it. Hey, you know what we're going to do tomorrow for the first time in a year? Stock watch. Who's trending up? Who's trending down? This will be the fifth year in a row that we've done it. Cannot wait. It's a Wednesday staple. But until then, shout out Richie Carney behind the glass. We step aside for The Drive coming up next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.